Live to the Pride and Liberty Show. Me, Swinton Dobson, and him, Tim Pan. Today we discuss, are Charles Murray and Michel Foucault right? Does the left hate the poor? Tim.
I will start with Charles Murray, because we included two names in our title. Charles Murray is, of course, a figure who has a number of ideas which are deemed controversial by the polite sectors of society, and makes the argument in Losing Ground, which is not his most famous book, arguably, which is The Bell Curve, but it is what he calls his best book, one of his best books, what he called in a recent interview with Reason Magazine, of all places, makes the argument in Losing Ground that welfare, or more broadly, I'd call entitlement spending, which is an expansion of just what some people on the right think of welfare, cuts down, so to speak, on human flourishing. The late Michel Foucault also makes a similar argument, but from a very different position. I mean, Foucault, as many people would argue, is kind of anarchist, viewed the social democratic welfare state as what it is, I'd argue, the central essence. It's this form of warehousing people. It does not necessarily increase human freedom. Maybe the commies are right. Maybe communism would be different, and would not merely be stronger welfare. But I want to reiterate that I include things like Social Security, Medicare. In different societies have different names for it, so there is a problem converting the French to the English. Foucault is writing in the French context, but you could also include the American context, the English context, the Japanese context, and so forth. So I will take the anarchist, libertarian, full enchilada, so to speak, include everything and call it all welfare spending or transfer spending. And the idea that Foucault is somewhat right-wing is not new. There's a PFS thing on him. It was on Nietzsche, which is his central influence. It was on Nietzsche, and the PFS asked if Nietzsche was a right-wing anarchist. I mean, Foucault in his debate with Chomsky cites Nietzsche, too. Back to my argument. If the state gives you a kind of steady dose of just enough subsistence, maybe some over that, let alone more, it is terrible for what Charles Murray calls your self-respect. Murray is more or less a classic Aristotelian. Now, of course, Nietzsche and thereby Foucault is opposed to Aristotle. Murray is an Aristotelian in this sense, and Nicomedean ethics. And of course, Nietzsche in some ways opposed to it. But the opposition is not then to go out and create a social democratic welfare state that gives you everything you want without having to work, or without quote unquote self-actualizing, or becoming from a potential to an actual, you know, fully embodied human. So something like UBI or something like the broad welfare state might not bring this about. The Nietzsche and Ubermensch probably is not going to bring this about if he's being fed UBI every day. So the term warehousing the poor, which is an idea Foucault has used to attack the entitlement state, I think is a very interesting way to think about it. I think some of the people on the right should take this mantle up, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing it, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing this show. I'm not calling them quote-unquote leeches or quote-unquote parasites, which is oftentimes you get the idea of the tax eater type statements some people on the libertarian right will use. But I think it's better to look at them, the poor, as the agent themselves, the recipients as the agent themselves, rather than looking at who they're quote-unquote stealing from. Whether that's true or not, I mean, I think Kevin Carson and some other people will push back on that. I think that's actually a very interesting argument about who exploits whom on this regard. But I think also, you know, like sort of left-wing Catholics as well as right-wing Catholics, left-wing Christians, right-wing Christians, should take this argument seriously here, coming from Michel Foucault. Now, this might be where his right-wingness and Nietzscheanness comes. It's more of a problem than a feature here if you're a left-wing Christian and you say, well, Michel Foucault opposes welfare on certain grounds, but then you point out he's a Nietzsche. Well, then, of course. But I do think this is a worthwhile argument. In some ways, this is the argument I use myself back when I was more of a centrist, if not a center-left person. You know, I thought, well, these people don't seem to be flourishing if you give them just enough subsistence to get by. And as we discussed with our Hunter Biden episode, if you give them more, it seems like they kind of end up even worse off. So there's a certain strange sense where be careful what you fish for here. And as Maury would point out, the closer you are, the worse self-control you have, the worse discipline you have, which may be related to IQ. It may not be related to IQ, as Maury would argue. But the closer you are to this, the harder it is to turn away from an easy life, so to speak, of simple, which the state or the welfare state, and I include things like Social Security disability here in the United States, provides. So rather than looking for a new job, rather than taking a risk, starting a new business, you're just going to accept, you know, rather than getting new training, or rather than, even if you want to say that all jobs are BS, full David Graeber, it doesn't seem like unemployed people are particularly happy either. Again, this could be all explained by selection effects, but I think it's worthwhile to think about here. So like I said, losing ground. There's two classes that are developing, and if you look at someone like Gavin Newsom of all people, look at his family, look at himself. He looks like a Lincoln Rockwell photo of a classic American bourgeois family. Now, again, on the side, you could say his views are fringe. You could say certain he doesn't practice what he ironically does not preach what he practices. But that would be a classic example of the sort of two Americans. But if you look at the ghettos in cities in Europe, United States, it doesn't seem like they're starving to death on the one hand. This is where I will disagree with the Social Democrats. But on the other hand, it doesn't seem like they're flourishing. I think the term warehousing is actually quite a good term. So why not just cut the whole system apart, abolish the system, and bring about either have private charities or have them, you know, build their own mutual aid networks once the state collapses. So that would be my argument here. You know, and I want to use the word hate because the left loves using that word, and in particular the Christian left loves using that word against the Christian right. And so I'm going to ask the question, does the left hate the poor? Is Charles Murray and Michel Foucault right that the welfare state, to the people who have low impulse control, less discipline, is it like a poison pill? Like, is it harder for them to resist the easy life it can provide? So, Swithin, what do you make of my argument?
Well, it seems pretty clear that to a lot of people, having the offer of an easy life, they take it, and they clearly do. Do the left hate the poor? I mean, they certainly wouldn't say that their policies were deliberately designed to hold the poor down, although that is entirely possible. I think the left thinks that, well, in principle, thinks everybody is very similar. And so they would think, well, you know what, if I was in that position and I was having a hard time and they gave me welfare, you know, that would keep me, tied me over so that I could do something else and I would be able to progress. And it would be a good sort of safety net for me so that I could then go and improve myself. But it seems to be the case that, at least for many, that's not how welfare is used amongst the poor. And then the question is, well, why do they behave differently? And this is where you could say, in one sense, you could say the left hates the poor, because the way in which different people may treat welfare would show that people are, in fact, different, which is, of course, what the left don't like, because this goes to the Charles Murray stuff within in the bell curve. And that's even within races. Is that some people have higher IQ and some have lower IQ and therefore are going to behave differently in the same situation. And so to that extent, I think the left hates the poor because it reminds them that their ideology is contrary to reality, which for obvious reasons you're not going to like. It basically says that your ideology is false. So, but yeah, I mean, In a way, though, you could say that welfare is, on a more Machiavellian level, a way of warehousing the poor, because it's just a way of stopping them being a problem. It's a way we can kind of carve them out of their own area. We give them their stuff. They won't starve. So we'll just give them enough so they don't revolt. They won't end up being sort of the revolutionary lumpen proletariat. But, you know, they're just sort of there, and we kind of euthanize them with money. And so that they're no longer a political problem. That's, you know, I think that's an entirely possible interpretation of some motivations behind the current welfare state. Although I would probably say in most cases, a lot of the left here are just misguided social democrats and don't realize that it's money isn't the problem per se. I think that'd be my broad picture response.
So do you think more broadly, so I included my statement, not just what is sort of a standard welfare, but more broadly, entitlement programs also have the same problem here. Because, you know, as Murray points out, even that workplace disability is increasing. Yet, on the other hand, fewer jobs than ever are manual labor in the classic sense of manual labor. So, which doesn't make sense here. And if you, again, I mean, even people like Tyler Cowen point out, people who get this stuff, until they reach the retirement age, are kind of unhappy here. So this to me is an interesting problem, because it's like it's a problem of too much, almost. It's a problem of too much here. Now, I think this is an interesting topic to talk about here, because libertarians in general hate work, at least in general, like the sort of general libertarian ethos, which is one of the reasons why they, you know, want to reduce it somewhat, but it seems like work is useful for the individual if you take a sort of more expansive definition of individual and borrow from people like Aristotle, or borrow from people like even Nietzsche to some extent on this question here. So do you think work is central to a flourishing life, or work? Now, whether or not this is sort of David Graeber BS jobs argument, which sometimes I think Kevin Carson would deploy and some other people on the left libertarian spectrum would deploy. You know, is the job useful here? But it seems like even if the job isn't useful, people still get value from it in the sort of macro sense of the word here. And that's, I think, Murray's point here, that like it might in the short run be beneficial, but you know, is it beneficial long run? Do you think work is central? You may have answered this question before, but what would you say to that question, Swithin?
Yes, it is. But depending what you mean by work, I would say something that uses sort of your own capacities and your sort of the agents of change, I think is crucial. Because I think, okay, so let's bring up this. So if somebody is like long-term ill and it's not their fault, then you might, so this is sort of the classic situation, and they're poor. This would be the classic situation to which you go, okay, let's give them welfare. Or if it's not government welfare, it's private welfare or whatever, you know, and you give them the money and that's fine. The thing is though, people who are ill and but are kind of have comfortable income, I wouldn't be surprised, I would expect their self-reported happiness, now, whatever we think about self-reported happiness surveys and how useful they are, I would expect that their self-reported happiness would be lower than somebody who could actually work. Because, well, we're kind of designed to work and do stuff. And insofar as you can't do it, well, then you'll feel worse because you can't do it anymore. I mean, on a really somewhat trivial matter, it's kind of annoying for me, and I imagine, or it is annoying, the fact that I can't actually do things as well as I would normally do in my right hand, because I have some form of tendonitis in it presently. So, you know, as it were, actualizing your human potential to sort of transform the environment in a way, or to be a genuine cause of financial provision. So even with this the BS Jobs David Graeber thing, even if you're in this labyrinth, imagine one of the worst jobs, which isn't sort of like ones where you're getting beaten, for instance. Imagine you just work for this huge Kafkaesque bureaucracy. What you do, and they're told to do changes all the time for no apparent reason. There's no particular reason why you do anything, but you know that if you don't do it, you don't get paid, and therefore your family don't eat. At least in that circumstance, you can look at yourself and go, well, I am providing value. I am providing value to my family because they wouldn't eat if I didn't do this. And so even on the BS job kind of level, that has value. And as Charles Murray pointed out, J.K. Rowling still works and still writes books, even though she has very little financial interest in doing so, because she's not poor. Now, of course, if you wanted to get lots of political power, maybe you need to be even richer than J.K. Rowling is. And in the grand scheme of things, J.K. Rowling isn't particularly rich, at least in comparison to, you know, the Saudi royal family or the Rothschilds or anybody like that. But she works anyway. So any program which discourages work, be it even private or public, is going to be bad. And I think the reason why public ends up being worse than private is that what really matters, and what these people really need to do, a lot of them are welfare, not all of them, but many, would seem to be to, I think, as Charles Murray said, effectively inculcate them with middle class values. Or he said that that's what the upper class in the Victorian period did. This is an interview with John Stossel, is that somehow by culture inculcate as best you can a lower time preference, largely. And getting to save and not spend, and pretty much and take responsibility for their actions. If you did that, they'd be in a significantly better situation, and that's what's really required. Now the left don't like that, because that makes it sound like it's their fault, not society's fault, because of course it's always somebody else's fault. And again, highlights the fact that they do in fact behave differently, which is interesting. You mentioned, you know, I think was it Todd Lewis said this, or maybe he's quoting somebody else who said that the left typically think left but live right. And as you pointed out, Gavin Newsom is a very good example of that. He just looks like a waspy bourgeois American family. Like, that's very trad. But even though that's not what he espouses. Yes, work matters.
It's David Brooks likes to quote that, but if you ask David Brooks who he got it from Charles Murray. So there's a certain sense in which, you know, maybe all roads don't lead to Hans Hoppe, but maybe all roads lead to Charles Murray. All controversial questions end at Charles Murray. So my question for you is dealing with the Christian left on this topic here. This is one of our side niches, I think, which is worthwhile to do. This might be inside baseball. This might be considered an obscure rabbit hole for some. But my question here is regarding, I do think if there's sort of a black-pilled view on the future and there's sort of a more white-pilled view on the future, if you look at, like, who's going to be the threat in, let's say, 100 years, it seems like for certain reasons there will always be a Christian left to some extent. If there's a Christian society, just based on the fact that demographics, fundamentalists shall inherit the earth, and so forth. So my question is dealing with them on an intellectual level. I'm not talking about going out and campaigning for abolishing welfare. I oddly enough think, like, if this, you know, one of the arguments that Reason Magazine's types will make and Cato types will make is that these programs are, quote unquote, unsustainable, or you can't pay for them. Whether or not that's true or not is a good question. They probably are. But there's no political will to get rid of these programs. But I think in the future, I think we should change the culture surrounding it. And one of the ways to do that is to make arguments. Maybe this is a pointless thing to do, but I do think arguments on some level matter. So what do you think ought to be, you know, the Christian response to those who defend welfare on the grounds that you're just being mean to people who are facing hard times? It seems to me that giving people a kind of, like, if you think about school or think about, like, sports, you know, this is an area which is a useful analogy here. I mean, if every time someone struggles, you just give them the answer or, you know, let them win, they won't improve at all. So that's how I would explain this here. And I would also bring in the work of people like Tim Dillon, the comedian, who make the statement that COVID was a sort of dry run of sending everybody money, and obesity went up, Netflix usage went up. Again, you can argue over what is the good life, but it doesn't seem like eating potato chips and watching movies is a good life, and in particular in the Christian context. So that's how I would deal with the argument that they hate the poor. Now, the sort of deeper stuff that Charles Murray brings up about inequality, that to me is also an interesting issue. But I would say that if Murray is correct, then this goes back to the old PFS question about, like, you know, the what is to be done question, which was asked by the Council of Boogeymen, which didn't include Murray, but included people who quote Murray a lot, is I'm not sure. I mean, in some ways, that's their problem. The fact that, you know, if you want equality and people seem to be unequal, then how do you bring that about? I don't know. But if anything, you could say you need to do more work, which maybe that'd be the wrong solution for us to promote here. But it seems like, and Murray would point this out with as well as people like Thomas Sowell, it seems like the Black American underclass did much better before LBJ than they ever did after LBJ. So if that's your primary concern, and the main mechanism that Murray would bring up is the family, the destruction of the family, you know, giving the father, sort of removes the father as a provider, and replaces them with the state here. And this is a question that someone, I think Liz Brunig, but even Elizabeth Brunig, who debated Brian Kaplan, who's sort of a Washington Post left-wing Christian, social democratic type. But I think it has to be brought up, wagered up against the sort of the pro-welfare trad cats and trad Protestants who have moved away from libertarianism. And I think Hans Hoppe's work is also good. I mean, I think, you know, it's like all conservatives should be libertarians here. So that would be my response here, Swithin, to the sort of accusation that they hate the poor. It might be overheated rhetoric on my title here to say that here, but like no, I mean, like I think the quote is no country got rich and prosperous who was got aid on a macro level. That's an international economy. I forget who said that quote, but it's a good one. No country got rich thanks to the IMF. I mean, you think of the IMF as welfare. Now, if interestingly enough, on those types of global welfare programs, the left, and particularly the tanky Marxist left, sees right through it. Like they see right through a lot of these sort of development schemes. And actually, Murray himself spent some time with the Peace Corps in some like Aborigine type village, and that's where he actually sort of recognized. I think it's the Reason magazine. He states this. He recognized what the sort of LBJ onward, the sort of social democratic managerial state was actually doing, which is the Foucault analysis as well. So I don't think that it was the kind of anthropological in basis. So what would you make of my comments of dealing with the Christian left here? You might say that's inside baseball. It's an irrelevant topic here. But I do think that will always be an opposition force that's advocating for that. What do you make of that question, Swithin?
So to clarify, do you mean there would always be the Christian left to agitate for welfare?
Yes. In any rich society, it's so tempting to do. It's actually the richer society is the only society that could do it effectively enough.
I think there will be. But I suppose the distinction you might make here is Will there be someone agitating for public welfare versus private welfare? And I suppose that's the mode of it. So the left would go, well, there's not going to be enough from the private sector. And then the question is, well, how much is enough? But yes, I know, but I mean, as I say, in principle, private welfare, I have no particular objection to, in principle. But I mean, to make a distinction, if you're somebody who is ill or for no fault of your own and you happen to be poor, then yeah, welfare kind of makes sense. It would seem to be sort of a merciful sort of good act to, you know, help somebody out and it's not their fault. Fine. In the case, though, that somebody is in poor situation because it's their own fault, then in principle, I have no objection to some financial aid in the short run, but this is only contingent on personal reformation and sorting themselves out. And if they do sort themselves out, then and they start earning, you can start cutting it back until they can be responsible for themselves, again, financially. But if it's the case that they end up not using the money wisely or wasting it or whatever and not changing the way they behave, decide, well, you know what, I need to drink three bottles of beer a day and, oh, well, I'm running out of money because I've drunk it all. Well, at that point, you kind of go bye-bye. It's your own fault. And, you know, if your family don't bail you out, well, frankly, there's not much else we can do about it. And I think maybe that might be an interesting difference. Do you ever say to somebody, look, we've helped you as much as we can, you refuse to help yourself, we're just going to leave you to whatever happens thereafter. If this means you end up dead in the gutter, that's your fault, not mine. I suspect the Christian left would always try and sort of send in money to prevent that happening, which is, I think it's a question of when do your obligations end to somebody? It would seem that, I think the Christian left seems to have, if somebody is in a relatively poor position, then you always have an obligation towards them. Maybe that's ultimately a difference. And I think, yeah, I don't really think you're going to be able to get rid of those people per se. Although if they're doing it out of their own money, then at least there's a constraint on how far that they can go. Because the problem with public welfare is that it's almost as if the money pot is endless, which is interesting compared, say, the federal government with state levels. It does seem to be the case that budgets matter on the state and city level in a way that they don't on the federal level, because people always buy federal debt, but they won't necessarily buy debt issued by the state or the city. So yeah, I think we're always going to have them. But as I say, I don't think welfare per se is a problem. And I think the way in which the warehousing the poor goes, the Foucauldian term, it's more of a case of, well, we use the welfare just to leave them there. Whereas I think, at least ideally, if you're going to use welfare of sorts, it's to help people get out of where they are. And so you have to tie it to behavioural change, which you don't do with public welfare. It just doesn't happen. So I say that was the main difference. But yeah, to answer your question bluntly, yes, the Christian left are always going to be agitating for it, because I think they have an idea that they have never-ending obligations, and that's easy to deal with when you're using somebody else's money.
That's really my final comment here. This might be a shorter episode. It's within. I think the right, particularly the Christian right, should use Foucault as much as possible against people. You could. Some people. There's a meme about this, but that states that Foucault is an incel. that's a meme that sort of exists that of him. So I think his analysis here is quite effective here about like the social democratic state. And again, there's, like with many thinkers, there's sort of an evolution between the early and later ones. The later one is more of a curmudgeon oftentimes, and I think that's definitely the case with him. regarding that. I mean, even so, I just think I think the sort of the critiques that certain people on the right would make of Foucault, that he himself falls to low impulse behavior here. I'm not going to mention that anything, so the show doesn't get banned. I think he himself probably, if you want to do it on the personal psychological level, he himself would be very much prone to these kinds, would have a better insight than some people on this. So, the question of inequality here floats in the background here, which the left, of course, does not deal with, or if it deals with it, it deals with it in a way which it says you're basically starting point of your life. I mean, they'll bring up a person like Elon Musk and say his, you know, he, you know, there's some family money floating around in the background, you know, in South Africa, Dutch Afrikaner. But you have to beg the question, why were the Dutch Afrikaners so successful? And there's cultural reasons for that. There's also other reasons for that Murray would bring up here. So that also begs the question. And to answer that question, I don't know. I think Murray somewhat in the John Stossel Reason magazine does answer that question by saying, like, you know, there's plenty of useful jobs and professions that don't require that much schooling or knowledge. And anything, you could argue that they should get paid. We've sort of discussed this here with, you know, they should get paid more. And it's actually the social democratic welfare state that the managerial part of the state, which actually makes it certain professions more paying. So there's even ways where I could respond to that as a libertarian here, as a right-wing libertarian in this sense here. So that would be my overall comment. Thanks for doing the episode. If you have any further comments, please do. Thanks.
I largely agree. The welfare system as it's currently set up, even it is, as all of the right say, a big financial drain, but it's also very much a sort of cage made of dollar bills for many people who really need direction, which sort of employment helps with. And this kind of goes back to some of the stuff you see with Kevin Carson and stuff, you know. Would everybody be self-employed in a free market? Which answer is no, probably not, because I think some people and like being and are more useful if they are employed and are sort of quasi-slaves. I mean, it's like voluntary slavery. But I mean, Taleb says this about being an employee, you're essentially a form of slave. But you can choose if you work for them or not. And I think this sort of gets people to do stuff that they otherwise wouldn't do and ultimately is good for them. And so I think really what this boils down to is that in many cases for many people, as it were, constraints make you more free, whereas just pumping money into you and making you be freer, and that's always the argument for UBI, ends up being a form of chain. Now, I'd just like to thank everyone for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends and family and subscribe to us on Podbean and on YouTube. The more subscribers we get, the higher we get in the search rankings, and the more people can access this material. And if you'd like to contact the show for any reason at all, please contact us at mindgrindlibertyshow@gmail.com. That's mindgrindlibertyshow@gmail.com.